I almost came today and offered you the choice of hearing a sermon on that topic or hearing a sermon on the earlier passage we read. I kept on working through that one, and for me to preach on the topic of John the Baptist's beheading would have taken something like 25 or 30 minutes, and I'm a kind and benevolent minister. So let's talk instead about Jesus in his hometown. If we saw Jesus come into his own as a leader and preacher last week with the healing and resurrection of Jairus' daughter, this week shows a dedication to what we call the propagation of the gospel beyond his words and his presence, and beyond his own limitations. It's not easy to think about Jesus having limitations, but as we have told the story of Jesus coming into his ministry, here it is in the text before us. In his hometown, Jesus could not perform miracles. In another translation, he could work no deed of power, which is a phrase that I like. Among people who knew him, among people who had a preconceived notion of who he was and what he ought to be able to do, his power left him, and he could not do those things which had seemed so easy when they were among strangers. Can you imagine what it must have been for both him and his disciples to see this weakness? They've been out in the countryside working miracles. They've been visiting different villages and even raising the dead. And here in his hometown, Jesus is dismissed and cannot offer the great healing, resurrection, or other miracles to his own people. Now, Jesus had already begun to prepare his disciples for the frustrations of being the servants to the gospel that might lead to this. If you remember, a few weeks ago, we told the stories of the parables. Who was here for the parables? Does anyone remember the parables? The seeds? Thank you, Leo. Excuse me, Lex. Anyone else? No one? Okay. We'll go over them again. He told them that the word of God was like seeds. Seeds scattered by a sower, some of them landing on a road and eaten by birds, some of which sprouted quickly in shallow soil and just as quickly wilted, some of which were choked out by thorns, and some of which, only a few remaining, growing, but growing to bear so much fruit that it overwhelmed all of the ones that did not grow. He was preparing them to see the frustration, to see people come and join them in the church, and then to wander away. He was preparing them for the insults and public opinion that would attack their ministry. But until this moment today in his hometown, I don't know if the disciples really understood what it looked like when those seeds were eaten or choked back. And now that they had seen the failure of Jesus' power, when their faith might have been shaken, what does he tell them to do? Go. Bring a staff, wear some sandals, bring nothing else but the gospel. And then he sent them off two by two. Boy, that sounds scary. Does that sound scary to anyone else? Just me? Mission trip. It means being exposed to the whole world, anyone you might encounter in any of these towns, with no place to hide. If you can't find a place to sleep, you can't get a hotel, you need to make one. If you can't find a bit to eat, you can't rely on your past life as a software salesman to buy something. If your tunic tears, you need to fix it rather than buying a new one. You need to put yourself at the mercy of strangers and expose all your weaknesses to those you encounter. And if you find people who reject you, you need to trust in the gospel and shake the dust off your sandals. And this, he tells them, is what it means to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. It's absolutely terrifying to be that open. If you're not going to say it, I will. But Jesus recognized that you can't do the gospel halfway. To understand those you serve and those to whom you preach means putting yourself at their mercy and trusting the message goes through. It means understanding that the illusion of security and of safety in that money and that extra tunic, in that bag with some bread in it, are just that, illusion. barriers to understanding the experience of another person. When I was in divinity school, there was one other born UCCer in my class, and she introduced me to the Catholic Worker movement. Does anyone here know what the Catholic Worker is? Luckily, I'm here and can tell you. It's incredible. There are these people who undertake a discipline of voluntary poverty, including my friend Elizabeth, who is now a UCC minister in Northern California. And by voluntary poverty, I mean, so even if you had a job, you would pool all of your resources and get something like $10 a week as your personal spending money. And that is the voluntary poverty that we're talking about. And they do this to live in poor communities, not as someone offering a service to other people, but as a member of that community. And the money goes to things like having communal meals for people who are at their last dollar, who may be homeless, who may not have showers, who may not have all the clothes they want, or who are simply trying to make it through to the next week. It means sharing your meals with them, opening up your house in Des Moines. The showers are open for the 2 hours before meals in their Catholic Worker house. And it means offering solidarity with all these people who may not have been as voluntarily poor. But it also means not serving them alone as in the sense that everyone works. Everyone who comes into that house is part of the cleanup crew. It's not I serve you and then clean up the mess and then go away. It's we all come in together. Just as Jesus told his disciples to do when he sent them off with nothing but their staffs. The movement was started by a woman named Dorothy Day, who you can see in this cartoon. In response to the suffering of the Great Depression, and as a counter to communism in the 1930s, a different model for serving and making things that were needed that was based in God and not atheism. But as a gospel-centered movement, it finds itself in conflicts living out its missions. The first big one for the Catholic Workers was that it is, as a movement that follows the Prince of Peace, a pacifist one, which you can imagine drew some controversy in the 1940s. They were all conscientious objectors to World War II, and many people left, and the Catholic churches stopped subscribing to their newsletter. At other times, because it is a worker movement, it means the Catholic Workers stand on picket lines with union workers, moved by solidarity in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so they found themselves attacked inside and outside, and that continues to this day. But as Jesus knew with his disciples, living out the gospel is always challenging, and the work goes on. Intentional communities like the Catholic Worker expose people's internal concept of their identity to rigorous testing. Do you really believe it? Then say it when people are shouting at you. Is the gospel they preach worth what they give up? For the understanding of the gospel in their circumstance, in these circumstances, is not a brief interlude on Sunday mornings where you come to church and then go back to your life. It is life. And that understanding is why Dorothy Day is now being considered for canonization as a saint in the Catholic Church, despite all the denunciations she got from the Catholic Church in her lifetime. I don't know if we're all called to voluntary poverty. If you are, raise your hand. Okay, so I'm not sure either, right? It's an ongoing tension in the Bible that we have this call to it, and I have not resolved it yet. And one of the reasons why I haven't resolved it is I don't know how I could handle living in an intentional community like that, living in a house with a bunch of other people with a budget that requires vegetarianism simply for economic reasons. My brother-in-law used to live in a co-op, and I still don't know how he did it. And so that's a practical consideration, but I think maybe the reason why is I'm afraid of the gospel being my entire life. And that's what Jesus challenges us to do, right? To live the gospel. Paul, too, let our lives be a living sacrifice to Jesus Christ. But as we read through these stories of Jesus, we find that being true to the gospel means saying and doing things that can be unpopular, things that push people out of their comfort zones, things that many of us were trained as Midwesterners to avoid. We are, after all, Iowa nice. Because Jesus, if nothing else, was all about stirring the pot and forcing people to acknowledge the problems of the era. He knew he was sending the disciples out into the world and knew that they too might find places where the gospel alone could not turn hearts and where the conflict could turn bitter and cynical, griping and grousing rather than spreading the gospel. And I could imagine how dispiriting that must be. Because this has been the challenge for churches ever since. How do we center ourselves in the gospel in such a way that our lives together reflect the work of Jesus Christ in each of us? In the past 2 weeks, both the deacons and the church council have met to struggle with the question of what our path forward will be as the Church of Jesus Christ. How will Ankeny United Church of Christ live into our mission of being a welcoming church family, exploring progressive Christian theology, caring within, and serving beyond? I don't know what we're going to come up with, but I'm glad to be a part of it. What I do know now, and what I have known since interviewing with the search committee for the first time nearly 3 years ago, is that we are called to be faithful servants of Jesus Christ, to preach the gospel and bring hope to the hopeless. We are called to bring the love of Christ into the dark corners of the world, and we are called to make disciples in that world. And all of these are hard. And if they aren't hard, we're doing it wrong. And difficulty and struggle and things that are hard bring frustration and conflict as we push through comfort zones together, exposing ourselves to one another and trusting that we can use our discomfort to grow in our love of God and one another together, to talk and reflect on how the gospel is moving through us, and to share with the world how the things we do are products of our dedication to Jesus Christ, even if they aren't the things we might have chosen individually. Because we will be tempted to think that those challenges and conflicts mean we're making mistakes, mean that we've missed something, mean that we failed in our mission and betrayed our ideals. It might lead us to withdraw into backroom discussions full of doubt and fear rather than hope and trust. But I hope not. The gospel of Jesus is disruptive. To those who have power and do not know it, it can shake us to our core. To those who have unwittingly caused suffering, it can be a wake-up call. To those who find themselves stagnating, it can mean renewal. And to those who have felt alienated by society for not fitting in, it can save lives. And it is to this that we are dedicated. So as we find new ways for Ankeny UCC to preach the gospel in this place, should we find places where it does not find seed or power, let us remember the words of Jesus to shake the dust off our feet as a witness that it is the gospel that brings us strength and not the love of the crowd. Let us draw inspiration from a more modern prophet who tells us, the player's gonna play, 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 and the hater's gonna hate, 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 hate. Baby, I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake. I shake it off. I shake it off. Heartbreaker is going to break, 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 break. And the faker is going to fake, 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 fake. Baby, I'm just going to shake, 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 shake. I shake it off. I shake it off. Amen.